On November 1st, businesses will be able to start applying for licenses to sell recreational marijuana. As the date comes closer, some doctors are suggesting caution based on what they've seen in other states where pot has been legalized. Dr. Christopher Blazes is a psychiatrist and an emergency medicine physician at the University of Michigan. He's also an addiction psychiatrist, so he's board certified in all three specialties, which makes you, Dr. Blazes, very uniquely qualified to talk about what emergency rooms are seeing and the psychiatric effects of cannabis. How does using recreational cannabis land people in the ER?
Well, there's so many different pathways that it works. You know, people who are very skilled at using recreational cannabis will oftentimes end up in the ER much less than those who are initiating it for the first time.
So what happens, let's say baby boomers who indulged back in college and then didn't want to give it a try? What are they going to find in 2019?
Well, the cannabis of the 60s, 70s, and 80s is very different than the cannabis of today. The percentage of the THC content, which is the most psychoactive component of cannabis,
it's the stuff that gets you high.
Exactly. It's so much different. Back then, it was maybe 3 to 5%. And now, the genetic engineering of the plants themselves, it's probably around 15 to 20%. But what's also even scarier is that more people are moving towards even higher content types of cannabis use in the edibles and the dabbing and whatnot. So those percentages can be 80 to 90% THC content. These are not subtle effects. And, you know, things that were present in nature, one could argue that nature has a lot more wisdom than we do as humans, kind of arrive at a steady state of kind of a useful amount of the substance. But when we get involved and in our modern Western culture where more is better, it's no surprise that we end up with some difficulties.
What have we seen, Dr. Blazes, in states, let's say Colorado, where cannabis has been legal for enough years to build a database and statistics that we can learn from in terms of calls to poison control centers and visits to emergency departments?
Well, we're just in our adolescence of studying this, and the data is mixed. But there was a recent study that came out that showed that the emergency department visits for cannabis use have tripled since the legalization. And this doesn't even include the visits that happen as a result of complications from cannabis, but we don't know that the people were using cannabis. So I suspect it's actually even higher than that.
So help us understand. Let's start with the kind of physical problems that can result from using this more powerful cannabis.
Well, I think the two most prominent things that happen is immediately after use, there's a significant elevation in the heart rate. And this can, in people who have underlying cardiac disease, this can lead to arrhythmias and more severe problems. There's an increased incidence of heart attacks and strokes. And so this is most worrisome in kind of the older population in the country. So you combine that with the fact that it's such a more powerful chemical that it predisposes people to psychiatric complications.
Yeah, let's launch into that then. What kind of psychiatric issues?
If people have underlying psychiatric issues, I think few people would argue against the fact that high-potency cannabis will most likely make them worse. Now, there are some exceptions to these rules, and there's a lot to be determined here. But in general, for the most part, if people have a psychotic disorder, cannabis will make it worse. And furthermore, people who do not have a psychotic disorder, it can still present with episodes of psychosis.
And we saw some recent headlines warning about teenagers, especially at risk. Is that because their brains are still developing? I mean, the frontal lobe isn't really developed until someone's in their mid-20s, right?
Exactly. And this is what's really scary, is that there's getting mixed messages, parents and teenagers, that this is safe, that this is an appropriate medical drug to be used.
Medical drug. And now it's legal recreationally.
And now it's legal
for
recreationally.
21 and up, yeah.
But, you know, the more that we learn about this from the literature and what's being researched, is it absolutely has long-standing effects. And the more we learn, the scarier it gets.
What kind of effects?
Well, I think the most recent data is interesting about, they talk about this idea of pruning. The brain, as it fully develops, initially it has more synapses than we actually need to use. And then during the late adolescent period, the brain actually prunes them down to fine-tune and make them kind of the most efficient neural pathways. There's evidence now that the cannabis actually disrupts that pruning process. So that, in conjunction with the myelination that doesn't happen, as you alluded to, until you're 25 or 26 years old, we're learning that the cannabis directly disrupts these processes.
And what's the result then? What could be the difference in someone who, you know, has been using cannabis since their teens who did not? What would you see long range?
Well, again, there's so many different aspects, but we definitely know for a fact that there's an amotivational syndrome. We all joke about the fact that people who use a lot of cannabis end up on their parents' couches forever. But there's actually medical evidence to show that. There's evidence to show that it decreases your IQ, that there's cognitive deficits over time. You know, in addition to the fact that it increases the likelihood that if you have a propensity towards psychosis or psychiatric disorders, that this can unmask. And this brings into the account the idea of these epigenetic phenomenons, which is fascinating. And epigenetics is the idea that just we have these parts of our genes which normally are too tight and they can't be expressed. But if we get exposed to a certain type of stimulus, like a drug or an experience, it unravels these histones and then they can be expressed. Mm. So perhaps someone who had not been exposed to cannabis and would never become psychotic ever, but if they were, if these histones unravel, they can become psychotic and...
And we're really in unknown territory, aren't we? Because federal restrictions have been so tight, there aren't any real good guidelines for safe use of marijuana and cannabis.
Yeah, it's frustrating as a physician because the term medical marijuana is used, but in most other instances, when we use the term medical, then it's something that we can prescribe. We know what dose to use. We have regulations on what is actually being taken in by the patient. And furthermore, we have studies to know how they will be affected as a result of taking these medications. And we have so little of that data for cannabis in the modern era.
So we don't know about cannabis, THC, or CBD as far as how much is too much. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. We really don't. And I'm just glad you also brought up the idea of CBD because a lot of people kind of lump them together, THC and CBD, but they are vastly different chemicals. You know, and in my opinion as an addiction psychiatrist, I actually believe that down the road there will be more uses for CBD than THC because they actually oppose each other in some ways. In some sense, the CBD is almost like the body's natural kind of breaks mechanism so that in normal kind of marijuana plants, it produces both THC and CBD. The THC has the psychoactive components, and the CBD kind of like tempers the effects of the THC. But yet again, we're still in our early phases of understanding of this, and there aren't enough studies out. But I think first and foremost is recognizing that they are two vastly different chemicals that need to be studied separately is important.
Do you have concerns that CBD is making its way into so many consumer products, including food and drink?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, how can we, as a government who has the responsibility to maintain safety through, you know, Food and Drug Administration regulations, allow the insertion of a chemical that we don't even really understand how it works yet? I mean, it's showing up everywhere.
A Washington Post story on all of this says the cannabis industry disagrees that its products pose a danger. They say more studies are needed and existing data, and I'll quote here, are inconclusive about whether changes that have been linked to early cannabis use are damaging in the long term.
And of course, they're inconclusive because studying these chemicals is so hard and there's so many limitations in studying them. You know, for example, to do a randomized controlled trial or any type of serious type of investigation in literature, you have to go through so many regulations in order to just get the approval to go through the study. And this is because cannabis at this point is still Schedule I drug. And to do studies on Schedule I drugs is incredibly complicated. And so it's hard to arrive with good data in this setting.
Here we are with this disconnect between the federal view of cannabis and Michigan's view and other states. So what's the next thing? You're putting this out here. Now what? What do you want to see happen?
Well, I think that it's time to pause for a moment and bringing in some of the, you know, the aspects of mindfulness and recognize that this is an exciting idea and we're living in a complex, overstimulating world. And it's a natural inclination to want to have something to help us tolerate this world. And we're looking for something that's safe and effective. And so we have certain governmental bodies that are saying, like a lot of the state governments, this is safe and effective for so many different things, but the data really isn't there to support that. So I think we need to take a pause and step back and say, wait, I'm not going to use myself as a guinea pig and end up being one of those complications that happens. I think I want to wait until I see what happens.
Are you bottom line warning people back off and don't plunge into recreational marijuana use?
Well, I am a biased individual. I will say that by the fact that I'm an addiction psychiatrist, and perhaps I see the most complicated cases of that. But, you know, in terms of what I would recommend to my family members is absolutely. I would be careful, be mindful, hold off, and wait until we really understand how this chemical is acting on our brains.
Dr. Christopher Blazes. He is a psychiatrist, an emergency medicine physician, and a board-certified addiction psychiatrist at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.